Confuses can produce.
Intermedia. Have you ever heard Joan and I taking apart the tape recorder that wasn't working, and we didn't even have a screwdriver, so Joan got a rock and turned a nail into a screwdriver. We figured we could, if we could look inside it, we could figure out something, but we didn't manage to do that. Maybe get that tape recorder fixed. Because we were trying to do our own little band at the time.
And what was the band?
The Pythian Sistrum, as I named it, but it
Oh,
never did come
let me
out.
move this so that
Oh,
it's not,
sorry.
you're not touching it.
Okay.
I'm going to put it down here a little bit, if you don't mind. There we go. The Pythian.
Sistrum. I think it was the New Moon Pythian Sistrum. It was Marcia. She played the flute, and I did things with guitar, and we all did sort of intonations, and we experimented and got high and had fun. But
So
so
it was like junk music.
it was really an attempt to sort of connect. I continued doing that with Rhoda and Trudy for a while in Roy, where we just get a sound going and moving towards Eastern music. I think if we'd known more Eastern music, we could have maybe carried it off. At least my vision. I mean, of course, everybody has their own inner vision too of what you're trying to do. But Roy used to get quite came over to Judy's studio one time, and he got quite excited about what we were doing. He just thought it was the greatest thing. It was a kind of like a meditation thing, you just get this, what do you call that?
The groove,
Yeah, it
the
wasn't
beat,
jazz.
the
It was
mantra.
more, yeah, it was more of a, getting tones and chords, a sort of basic tone, and then working from that. And but there was no discussion of it as music, I mean, we didn't know anything about music, but we had
So you and Judy and Joan
and Marcia.
and Marcia were friends.
Yeah, and we did. I had a lot of ambitions actually to get people working, like to get women working together, but it was hard.
Well, this going against the grain, I guess, in some ways, but going with the grain in other ways, because it was an opening of the consciousness with regards to women and their
Yeah.
role and in all these activities, right?
But I mean, basically, the guys saw the women as, whose chick are you? So, if you didn't sort of belong to somebody, you actually were invisible. So, so you'd fall out of the order of it all. What was that?
That's Bill Bissett,
Oh.
a blue ointment,
Oh, yeah.
and a reading, I guess, with projections,
Hmm.
also an electrical connection. And Martina.
Right. Have you seen her?
No, I haven't.
I don't know if she's still living at the women's center downtown. She was doing some really interesting poetry at the time.
She was.
Yeah. But once again, it's this sort of, there was this general despising of any kind of development or formation. It was sort of a no-no in a way. And I guess it was, and also being a woman, of course, you weren't supposed to do that either. You're supposed to just disappear into the background. So that was a struggle.
You mean to say you weren't supposed to accomplish anything?
Yeah, no,
Right. This was
and because
threatening.
it would be threatening to, to men,
Right.
So even though you had these sort of divine visions or demons, you were supposed to keep your demons to yourself.
Well, but writing as such can be a solitary act too. I mean,
Yeah.
it doesn't, I mean, Yeah, no one can stop you from thinking and writing and feeling.
No. And, so, you know, there's always been women writers, of course, yeah. But, like, the idea of getting up there and doing it, projecting it.
Being the focus of attention.
Yeah, yeah, you weren't supposed to be the
focus. You could be a dancer.
Yeah. Or a model or, you know.
Right, a waitress.
Yeah, something else. Yeah. But you couldn't be an artist. It was also unconscious, you know.
At the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was unconscious for the men. But
and
was
for
it?
The women.
And
yeah.
For the women?
Oh, yeah, no, it took a long time before women started to get that. You know, if you'd be at a party and there'd be a bunch of us, you know, we'd be sitting, talking maybe to each other. And always somebody come, a man would come over and feel like he had to be the center of that group. He could not, you know, tolerate this idea. I mean, guys can get together and talk, but women can't, you know. So I had a lot of anger, I guess.
You felt that. I mean,
oh,
you were
yeah.
aware of that. So.
Well, yeah. But then I guess I grew up as a communist, so... And my parents were communists, so they were more aware of those things, you know, even before the movement started. The movement started, yeah. In the first, I think the first feminist, I used to try to get female artists together, but it didn't really work. But when I went up to Simon Fraser, we had a group started there, and then we had the first meeting down at my place on 4th Avenue there. And I had one chair. We invited a female psychologist to come down and talk about it. And she ended up feeding us back all the same old shit. Everybody got so pissed off, you know, that she hadn't the slightest idea of what was going on. Burning my dome on the
steps. Yeah,
steps.
I want to talk about that.
Yeah,
I heard about that. Yeah. I have pictures of that.
Do you have pictures
of
the burning?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. I thought nobody did.
Yeah.
Because Joan was kind of mad at me because I kind of figured there was a sort of period where I'd have to get it through. If I told anybody I was going to do it, they'd obviously stop me. So I kind of had to. I was in the. They were all folded up actually in the back. For some reason, yeah, they pushed our stuff off out of the room, and because they wanted to use the room for something else, I think for the performance, and so we're a little bit pissed off about that. And then I saw these two guys come in, they're French Canadians, I think, and they were sort of sneaking in the back way. So I grabbed them. I said, "You want to participate?" And they, sure. So they helped me grab it, and we took it around from the back around and put it on the front stairs. We had to go around the block.
Well, you went into the lane.
Yeah,
through that,
yeah,
that
yeah,
back
through
entrance.
The lane, yeah.
Yeah.
And because... Oh, there's the fire, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Can't even see the dome.
We can't hear, I guess. I don't know what...
Yeah.
Emoliated, right?
Yes,
isn't that the term?
Emoliated, yes.
Some Buddhists sitting on the stairs.
Right, yeah. That's what the concept, I think, was. I mean, Joan was really mad at me because she wanted to take... I should have told her. But it was sort of a spontaneous thing. I didn't really think about it, you know, until... I just thought this would make a good final act. You know. In fact, I borrowed somebody's lighter, I remember... Put it up and on the front steps and asked for a lighter. Got various lighters contributed.
Was it difficult to burn?
No, it went up very well. Just glue and.
There's a bit of an audience, but probably
not much.
Not
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It was, and Werner was quite excited about it. He said, "What? What's happening?" I guess the main event was the police coming, not the police, the firemen.
Oh, there's an audience here.
Yeah.
Oh, so what did the fire department say and do?
Nothing. I split. As soon as I heard the fire engines, I ran up and got the 4th Avenue bus and went home. Those are nice pictures, actually, of the flames. You got the flames really well, eh? They look like flowers. Yeah, no, I don't think I was ever connected to it.
Oh, right. You mean your name didn't appear in the paper the following day?
No, well, I was afraid I'd get arrested, you know, for doing such a thing. I did a Ron. Did you see my Roniel book?
I must have.
Yeah. I sort of went down to Granville and looked into the men's magazines. So I bought a few and did collages out of that. And it had a purple lilac colored cover and a torso. I just cut the torso off called Practical Knowledge. And then I did a lot of Roniel things inside it. They were all loose. And the Vancouver Gallery actually bought it from me, so it's down there in the collections. At one time, actually displayed it.
Do you have a copy of it?
I'm not sure.
I'd love to see it sometime.
Yeah, it's in the gallery, but they did a show on the 60s a few years ago, I guess, 10 years ago or something. Yeah, that was part of all our aesthetic was impermanence. I used to write poems and then read them and then get rid of them.
Was that just like flaunting?
Flaunting the muses, actually. Mm. It kind of was stupid, really. Because a lot of that stuff probably would have been, could have been collected or put somewhere, but just had that.
Well, it was despite the market.
That's what it was. Yeah, yeah. It was anti commodity, which ultimately failed because everything got very straight after that.
Well, see, I heard that, and I was reading recently. I think it was in the National Gallery publication of their 60s show, that the 60s were the point at which was the pinnacle of. And the completion of commodification. I mean, like everything was had been successfully commodified within the capitalist system by that time.
By what time?
By the 60s.
Like early 60s or late 60s?
Well, by the mid 60s.
By the mid 60s.
Yeah.
Everything
and so I think we were strongly in reaction.
Yeah, we were, yeah.
To that.
Yeah.
It's curious because I had no sense of history at the time.
No, of course not. One, one doesn't when one's young, especially. Mm. Yeah. I don't remember why we were doing it. Well, people just do things. I mean, you get kids, they'll, like I noticed at the co-op, if I'm gardening, the kids come out, they want to help, they want to work, Like some little boy who's about 2 feet high, a couple of barrels to haul, and he thinks, he loves it because it's participation. we're just that kind of animal that we have to keep doing things. But this thing, I guess we despise mastery. But maybe because we couldn't accomplish it, I don't know.
Or maybe because we had there was an intuition, that the mastery was almost shared a place with death in a way.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's too final. Yeah, you didn't want anything too final. Well, that's what our music things were like too. We just see what emerged rather than make a plan. And I can remember even in high school being told that, if you're going to write even a paragraph, you had to make a plan first. Beginning, middle, and end, and know what you were, and I just despise that. I remember even those days, it was so uncreative to make these set forms.
So, in effect, you when you look back, then do you see yourself as being a poet and a musician and a visual artist?
No, I saw myself primarily as a reciter, as a you know, and all the rest of it was. I did kind of hope, I guess, eventually one could create a multimedia poetry production.
And did anyone successfully do that? Did Jerry do that?
I don't think any of us really. Like Laurie, what's her name? You know, she's quite famous.
Oh, Anderson.
Laurie Anderson. I mean, I think she kind of got all that gear together. I guess I did have a vision of having some good recording machinery. And, you know, I would have loved to have had some sort of way to enhance it. And I thought more actually intermedia would facilitate that in a way, but it just didn't. You know, it was very divisive. I mean, the real artists wanted the money and the facilities directed towards their project, and so we didn't really accomplish much. But I think, you know, a really good sound studio would have been really worthwhile having, as far as I'm concerned. But then all my friends were visual artists, so. But I didn't, like, Judith was much more of a visual artist than I was. I was more into, the dance, the movie. Did a little bit of dance, but I think too much of a layabout to become a good dancer too. I mean, that in itself was. That's such a, I always felt it pretty limited. I guess I had this dream of, you know, unlimited art that sort of exploded in like a plant does in spring, you know, and opens up and sings, does its thing. But it didn't really happen. Well, I guess the story about the, you know, me and Joan hammering the screwdriver out of a nail to open up the non-functioning, useless tape machine. It was frustrating. But I didn't know what was possible. You know, that's the thing.
Or what was probable.
Well, what was probable was what happened, I think.
So, you know, I'm puzzled. Like, if you were to try and formulate a question to base, like, an examination of that period and that sort of event on, what would that question be?
How do you mean?
Like, I'm just wondering, like, what kind of questions should I be asking people? And what kind of questions can a project like this answer? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't.
What do you think about that?
It felt, you know, like, because originally, as I say, intermedia was seen as just a place to get stuff for a lot of people. And the collective thing was just, I think, part of the zeitgeist of the time that sort of overcame it. With the energy of, Flaky, and really, Glenn was pretty amazing that way. He was so generous and open and wanting participation, you know, so he always encouraged that, but it was what it was. We had the Ronio. I did, you know, produce some things on the Ronio. I think you just have to ask each individual where they're coming from and where they were coming from in the beginning and what happened to them on the way. because things, you know, definitely there were changes in people's behavior. There was a, you know, the whole thing of competition, you know, this was still pretty strong in I know, pure art, that's what we wanted. A total orgiastic art. But that's what I wanted, but I don't know, you know, you'd have to ask everybody, mm-hmm. you know, what were they, what did you start with and what did you accomplish and or not accomplish and where did it end? I don't know. I'm not too good at those sort of questions. Go look at Gail Tuttle's manuscript.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. I mean, from the performance point of view, it was really really evocative. I mean, it brought me right back. But there was more to Intermedia than just the performance element.
Well, there was participation and the idea of public participation and the idea that everybody was an artist. Everybody was a musician. Everybody, anybody could paint. Anybody could take photographs. Anybody could play the flute or whatever. And to some extent, that was true, but
it didn't. Oh, you mean there was a suspension of that sort of critical...
Yeah, that's right, yeah. The suspension of standards. So some people really, really looked down on that. But I thought, I guess as growing up as a communist, you know, I always thought, not of course a Soviet communist, but, you know, coming from idealists... that that's the way it should be. Well, studying anthropology too, you know. I mean, in, you find in a lot of cultures, people, everybody does do something. It's, there aren't any specialists. And I guess it was the last, as you say, the last gasp of anti-specialism and it turned totally. But then, you know, it'll turn back again too. That's what history's like. It sort of fluctuates between
poles.
Yeah, between left and right. And
were you studying anthropology?
I did. I kind of at one point fancied myself becoming an anthropologist, but I think I got pregnant or something. Yeah, actually, I rather liked the idea of being pregnant, and it's, but I didn't realize how much responsibility it would be, and also, well, my life was a mess, you know, it was a mess. Pretty destructive, I guess.
So so this suspension of, what is it, suspension of standards?
Yeah, this norm of of style, and norm.
Interesting when you think, though, that it was only for a very short and intense period of time. I mean, it lasted from, in a public way. I mean, there was certainly the sound gallery and the motion studio and all of that stuff that came before. But I think that that, to me, seemed like it was a very sort of centrally, you know, initiated project, you know, that maybe was Sam Perry's project, you know, in a way. And other people took part in that vision, but Intermedia seemed to be a number of different projects going on simultaneously. So it had an organization. You know, it was a different kind of event in a way. But it was a very short period of time. It was 67 to 72. And then everything sort of seemed to go back to normal, right? It was like everybody fell asleep or the guards fell asleep for 4 or 5 years, and
see, it was partly local too. I mean, you know, living, a lot of people lived in those in kits because it was cheap at that time, and one could find rooming houses and places to stay. So, in a way, one was glad to have some sort of structure, a building to go to work in. So that was energizing for a while.
But the suspension of standards allowed things to happen
Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened, you know, without that.
Yeah. That freedom. That, you know, I mean, freedom was what you know, people really did believe that we could all be free, and with some tragic, as we know, results. See, my brother suicided. When did he suicide? I can't remember now, but he also, you know, was providing drugs, actually, for a time. He was actually running drugs from the States up to the poetry conference they had there with Olson and Creeley and Duncan and all those guys. And then he got caught. And my father really freaked out, too. Mm. I think my father officially quit the Communist Party at that time. You know, he just felt that it was... he felt very disgraced by that. And he didn't give my brother any support at all. My brother was completely... not really cut off, but he felt cut off, mm-hmm. obviously, so... guess all those things happen.
So when did you sort of, were you a part of the motion studio and the sound gallery and stuff like that?
No, I don't know. I think I was pregnant. I had a kid at that time. Well, my kid was born in 61.
Oh, really?
And, you know, so I was looking after for, well, at least 5 years.
So you were young.
Oh, yeah, very young.
39 to 61. So four. You were 20. You were 22.
Yeah, right, yeah, right, yeah. Right, I was born 40.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. 21.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, much too young to have a baby. Mm-hmm. Really. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, everybody does, but. Mm-hmm. I just realized it was really restricting. My desire to. Be in the world. It was, you know, I couldn't go out. I had to stay in all the time, so then I had a nervous breakdown. Well, I actually went back to university, UBC, and tried to take psychology and become a teacher or something, and I broke down. I was exhausted. Yeah. There were no daycare centers. There was one daycare center, I think, in Vancouver, and, you know, I'd have to get up really early in the morning, take the bus, the daycare center, leave my daughter there, and then go up to UBC and try to be an operational student. But I never wanted to be, really. I'm really glad I never became a teacher, because it's so restrictive.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So when did you become part of the poetry scene and the literary scene?
That's what's hard to remember. I guess I met Bill Bissett, and I don't know how I met Bill Bissett. Like years ago, I mean, even before that, I guess Judith and I met Jerry Geisler when he was living down on Robson Street in that place, back alley place. It's all gone now. But I used to hang around Robson Street, and I don't remember what age it was, but we were fairly young. I guess it was university.
Was there like a Russian tea room there or something?
Oh yeah, there was everything. There was the black
Vienna,
the Black Swan. Yeah, the Vienna, old Vienna became the Black Swan, and it was an old house behind the cafe where one could go and just sit about a lot. And I guess I did a lot of sitting about, and I used to hang out with Jerry Geisler and Judith, and I guess maybe met Bill then in those days. So I guess a lot of it did come from UBC, being around there.
Warren Tolman?
Yeah, he was later. But you know, there was creative writing classes and publications and things like that. And then, yeah, I met Helen Goodwin there and got into her dance class, and that really altered my life, because it really created energies that were quite crazy. Of course, one wants to be crazy when one's young, you know. You don't realize how dangerous that is, too. You know, you can really go over the edge. But I remember us taking over the student Union Building with our crazy dancing. We just erupted out of the gym or whatever the place was that we were practicing, and we just went running around and yelling and screaming, and people were very distressed, and they were, you know, were coming and trying to shut us down. And, you know, you get into that sort of kind of crazy. Well, and then we did do the Bacchae, which was actually a Greek, a classical Greek play, but we took that sort of energy into it, so that was quite fun, and meaningful to me, you know, the idea of energies that come from somewhere.
Uncontained.
Yeah, that are contained and then, you know, and released. And once they get going, there's nothing can stop them. So I guess I always looked for that, the dionysiac in art.
And so Helen released that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She encouraged that release.
She taught us basic. I mean, Helen herself was very contained, but she had a sympathy for that. Well, you know, Helen killed herself too, mm-hmm. and walked into the ocean, which is quite a dramatic place mm-hmm. to do that. We had a wake for her down at the beach.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah. But she did sort of bring out. Well, the body does bring out magic, and you know, there's a lot of things we don't know, and the body can bring. I think that was what was happening too in the 60s. There was that kind of feeling of bursting against the bounds and despising containment, you know, and form. And yet the dance form, you know, you move your body, you just find you could do all sorts of things you didn't know you could do, you know. But I'd say that's that kind of thing is gone for me now. But spent too much time putting it, the genie back in the bottle. Because it was impossible, you know. People get really upset. I guess it was sort of incipient feminism too. I mean, like the Dionysian cult was a feminist cult in Greece. Probably post-patriarchal, and it got crushed, I think, pretty quickly, or, you know, taken in and formed. But this is what societies do, you know. They take those sort of energies and try to put them back into a bottle, which is, I guess, the only way you can really produce anything, because the Dionysiac impulse is probably towards death, you know.
Uncontrolled
death, yeah. Like, you know, like what's his name? Who's the guy that was killed in the movie star? James Dean. No, that kind of energy was ultimately destructive to the container. So what? We were just lucky to be around when we could do it. Mm-hmm. Those beings, you know, you could dance with it. And the group, you know, that's the thing is, you know, you'd get this sort of mass excitement at those beings. And you could lose yourself in this kind of ecstasy. And that's how I figured art should be. This fluorescent ecstasy. But
So what part did drugs play in all of that, do you think?
Drugs helped. But I spent a lot of time without drugs. Very little. Drugs are hard to get.
Mm-hmm. And dangerous.
Well, I mean, I didn't do any dangerous drugs.
No, it was dangerous because it was...
Because you could go to jail for 7 years for a joint. Yeah. So I used to take my stuff and wind it up in a ball of yarn and, you know, just keep it concealed. But I don't think we used it that much, and it was hard to get. I don't think it was that important. It was energy, it was youth, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what you've got, that seed energy. Mm-hmm. And what you do with it in the future, you know. Well, I've still got boxes and boxes of stuff. That's what I should be doing right now, you know, is putting that stuff together to try to remember.
Are you going to do that?
Yeah.